Okay, first of all, I just want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. I also want to remind you that Learning in Our Shul this week is graciously sponsored by Dr. and Dr. Wenger and family commemorating the yahrzeit of their grandfather, Avraham ben Avraham. Neshama should have an aliyah. And we should continue to observe the yahrzeit in good health and good spirits. He was a great, great man with a tremendous impact on Am and Medinat Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and of course, he was a man who brought a lot of music into the world, from if I got my history correct, Doc.
Yes, he did.
Yehi Zichro Baruch, which actually is ironic in light of tonight's questions. I decided to pick a couple that were a little musically inclined. Let me explain what I mean. So the first question actually is a live question, like within the last 2 months. I know a person who works as a school's activity coordinator. Let me open disclaimer. Not for one of our local schools. So I want to say that so before you start like, oh, I'm talking about her, oh, I'm talking about him. No, this is not a local person. But he is a school activities coordinator, and he was instructed both by the student GO and by his administration to hire a DJ to play Simcha music for Rosh Chodesh Adar. This is a middle school. And the school wants the children to be pumped for the upcoming month of Adar, as well as the upcoming Yantif of Purim. And when going over the music with the DJ and the student government, the student council president insisted that the song Adama Vishamayim be played, because apparently in his school, that is a very popular song with a popular dance. It's like a whole big thing. And the student activities coordinator said that it was ushered to play the song. So my question tonight is, what's up with that? Where did that come from? And so that was question number one. And question number two. I apologize. Hold on 1 second. I forgot to. Okay, sorry about that. I forgot that. I don't feel so bad because of my Sunday share with Rav Asher Weiss. It's happened 2 weeks in a row where he also had to unplug the phone to cut things off. So I apologize for that. Question number two, because we are running a great streak for a number of months with a COVID question. So I'm going to give you one. This one also not so out of the box, right? Reuven was supposed to fly to the States from Israel this week. He ordered a taxi to take him to the airport at night for a flight that was going to be quite late. You know how those Israeli flights are. You take the red eye, you land in the morning, 5:30 in the morning. So before the taxi arrived, the driver had heard that the flight was canceled due to the closing of the airport. So he didn't tell Reuven. Instead, he picked up Reuven and he brought him to the airport because, after all, that's what he was hired to do. And as they approach the airport, the driver tells Reuven that if for whatever reason the flight doesn't take off, he was planning on remaining around the airport and could take Reuven back home. And of course, since the flight was canceled, right, that's exactly what happened. And Reuven called the driver and says, says to him, you know what, I need a round trip. As soon as he gets back to wherever he left from, Yerushalayim, let's assume, Reuven refuses to pay for the trip, arguing that the driver should have told him that he knew about the airport closing. He also demanded that the driver pay him back for the trip to the airport, since he shouldn't have taken him in the first place. Is he correct? So we've got the driver, right, and who kind of plays a game, and we have Adama B'Shamayim. Any votes in either direction?
I like the song.
Okay, so we'll begin with the song. We'll see what time we have. We may be able to get it. It's another week when we may be able to get through both. Okay? First of all, what's up with the song? So I realize that as I'm having this conversation, I know the student activities coordinator, by the way. And so as I get involved in this discussion with him about the song, right, I said to him, I'm so embarrassed. I don't know what Adama V'Shamayim is. And so he says to me, yeah, because you're old. You're like you're way beyond your generation. And he like says it with a perfectly straight face, and he's a friend of mine, so like I can't understand. He's a little younger than me, but we're not talking like middle school. And he says to me, well, I can't believe you just don't know. And he's like doing it with a straight face, but he has one of those deadpan straight faces. So you got to, I was like, whoa. So I came home and I asked my kids. And my kids said to me, you don't want to know. So then I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, you know, I have all those lyrics that, you know, going off in my head, you know. And so I went back and I checked. There is a individual who calls himself Matt Dubb. And Matt Dubb says that there's a song with the following lyrics. Adama v'shamayim, chom ha'esh, tzlil ha'mayim, ani margish zot begufi, beruchi b'mishmati, heya, 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 ho, heya, 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 ho, ani margish zot begufi, beruchi b'mishmati. In other words, earth and sky, the heat of the fire, the sound of water, I feel it in my body, in my spirit, in my soul. Heya, 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 ho. And so he tells me, this is the song. I feel it in my body, in my spirit, in my soul. So I said, now I'm totally, I said to him, now I'm totally lost. Like, what's going on? Like, why are you fighting with these kids? And what are you telling them, Sasser? I feel like you feel something in your body, in your soul. Like, you know what? Big deal. I open up the window. The blinds to the window over my desk in my office in Union. I feel the heat of the sun get into my body. I never paid attention. Maybe it's a slow thing with me about the soul and the spirit and whatever, but what's the big deal? So he says, go a little further. So I looked into it a little further, and it says Matt Dubb got it from a Jewish group, Israeli group, really, calling itself Segel. And the name of the song is Strong Wind, Deep Water. And if you follow up where Segel comes from, it seems to be coming, it seems to have adopted this song from a different place where it seems to be some sort of rainbow worshiping song from a group that worships the moon goddess and the horn god. So now I now first understood the assumption. We have a second generation song. The original song has something, hey, 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 ho, right? That has some sort of rainbow worship attached to it. Now you're talking to a guy who got to stand when I got certified to perform marriages in the city of New York. I got to stand between the priestess of the sun god and some guy who became a priest, you know, a minister, so that he could do his brother-in-law's wedding in his Department of Corrections uniform. That was the order on the line. It was me, him, and some lady who was dressed up in some really, really colorful stuff that every time I see bright light, I still remember seeing, you know, watching her stand behind me. Quite the experience. It also is the beginning of a great joke. So three guys walk into an office, a rabbi, a priest, and a priestess of the sun god. So, but what does this really, really have to do with playing the music and in Rosh Chodesh Adar? Right? Like, what's the big deal over here? So my friend says to me, what do you mean? Its roots are in Avodah Zarah. You're not allowed to have benefit from Avodah Zarah. Can you even listen to music if its roots are bad? This led me to an exciting conversation with another friend of mine who said to me, what do you mean? We have a lot of songs where roots are bad. Rav Moshe Feinstein, 1959, has a tshuva in Igros Moshe, Evan HaEzer, Chelek Aleph, Siman Tzadi Vav, where he addresses the issue of singing songs that come from a person who wrote a lot of nice songs, but went off the derech. And now his songs are associated with the person that he currently is, which is a person who, let's just say, has gone to some very bad places. Heya, heya, ho. Or you know who I might be referring to. So Moshe says, and I quote, "B'davar echad shaya ben Torah, v'cheskas kashrus kamashanim." That singer was a person who was a Torah individual for many years. And he says that person wrote music at that time when he was a good person, right? When before he went off the derech, he said he wrote music that were built off psukim, and they were songs to sing at weddings, and a lot of B'nai Torah sing them. He says, "Lanias daiti eni roa bezeh shum iser." I don't see any problem singing his music. Because those songs were written when he, before he went off to Derech, before he was identified in all sorts of horrible places. So Rav Moshe says, we have other instances where we have an individual, Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Yochanan Kohen Gadol served as Kohen Gadol for 80 years as a perfectly pious Kohen Gadol in the Second Temple era. But then at the end of his life, he went off the Derech and he became a Kuzi, he became an Apikoros. And so the fact is, he made, in the first 80 years, he made a lot of great Takanos. And we call them Takanos to Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So Moshe Feinstein says we still call him on his name, even though he went off the Derech. So he says, in given that experience, it seems hard to say that we have to stop singing this fellow's songs. And he says, even to be machmir, because, you know, sometimes our Moshe will say, well, it's not for B'nai Torah, they should be a machmir. Here, Moshe says, I don't even see why B'nai Torah shouldn't sing those songs. Oh, you want to tell me it's a hanacha shem l'rishayim? We do certainly say, and we've discussed in this form and others, that when we have a rabbi who's gone off the derech in a very bad way, we don't teach the Torah that he was involved in. We, you know, Rabbi Shach has been pretty strong about that. But he says, that's true, says Rav Moshe, for Divrei Kedusha, right? For his Divrei Torah. But to sing his music, the words were written by David HaMelech, not a problem. Now, I just want to point out to you that while we're talking about said individual, right, not everyone agrees. Rav Menashe Klein, Mishnah Halachos, Volume 6, Number Kof Ches, he doesn't mention Rav Moshe Feinstein, but he says the exact opposite. He says, you can't even sing his music because he is now known as a person of ill repute. So to give him repute, right, to give him a positive reputation, is to sort of create all sorts of difficulties. And Rav Menashe Klein, the Ungvar Rav, was very opposed. The Debitzin Rav in Shalos Teshuvos Be'er Moshe, Volume 6, Number Ayin Dalid, in the notes, he says you're also not allowed to play his music, and you can't even sell his tapes. So the Debitzin Rav says, you might even go looking into a person who would stoop to selling those tapes. Right? Now, he also leaves out Rav Moshe Feinstein in the discussion. In the Skver Rebbe, the Zera Yaakov, Gilyon number 26, he also says, they quote the Debitziner, and they also ignore Rav Moshe. I find it fascinating because when you look back about cancel culture and all the other stuff that we're reading about in the news and experiencing, if you even thought about voting for somebody, you know, you have to check your privilege. It does have some sort of basis somewhere. There is some sort of location. But it's not the view that Rav Moshe Feinstein held of. It was the view of the Debitziner Rav. It was the view of the Ungvar Rav. But that's an extreme. Rav Yaakov Hillel. Who is Rav Yaakov Hillel? Rav Yaakov Hillel is a great Kabbalist. Shalos Teshuvos Vayoshev Hayom, which is also kind of ironic because those two words up here in this week's Parsha, proving once again what, my dear Dr. Wenger?
Everything's connected.
Right? So I just wanted you to know that. So Rav Yaakov Hillel, the great Kabbalist, notes that even if you change the words, the negative association with the music leaves an impression on a soul that's not positive. And so therefore, music from a person of ill repute should not be sung or heard. But a song whose original source is long forgotten, let's say, for instance, Ink Helokeinu apparently was, you know that term, Ink Helokeinu, Ink Helokeinu. That's apparently an old German beer song, right? But nobody knows that, except if you like those little tidbits, you know. So in such a situation, even Rav Yaakov Hillel says, it's not going to have a negative association if you are a six-year-old and you go to learn how to daven Ink Helokeinu, and they teach you Ink Helokeinu, Ink Helokeinu, and then and it's not going to be until you're 15 and looking for something cool to bring up at the Shabbos table that you're going to discover that it was a beer song. By then you will have been singing this tune for 9 years of your life. You're not going to change it at that point in time. So even Rav Yaakov Hillel says those things don't have a negative association on the soul. But Rav Ovadia Yosef, in Shalos Teshuvos Yabia Omer, Volume 6, Chelek Vav, or Rechaim Siman Zayin, says, although in the same words, it's hard to say that you can play the music if it has a negative location, the tunes themselves, taking a tune that has a negative source and applying it to a positive place, can't be a problem. And why? So listen to this, says Rav Ovadia. He says, everywhere I go, he says, there's a shalos u'tshuvos krach shel romi. And he says that all over Israel, and I know certainly from my own experience, says Rav Ovadia, the Sephardic tunes, right? All of these tunes make their ways into our tfilos. So we'd have no tunes otherwise. We're not allowed to sing the tunes of the Beis HaMikdash. Ich nashira shir Hashem al admas nechar, we say in Tehillim. How can I sing the songs of Hashem outside on a foreign land? So Rav Ovadia says, if you really went back and examined, you discover most of the tunes that we use today have some sort of foreign place to find it, both in Ashkenazic B'nai Esav Krach Shel Romi location, because that's where the Ashkenazim were in Europe, and even in the Sephardic land. So Rav Ovadia says, I don't understand why you would have a problem. And you know what's fascinating? Rav Lazer Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer in Chelek Yud Gimel Simen Yud Beis, is literally dumbfounded by the very same sources that Rav Ovadia Yosef quotes as a basis for Heter. And he says, I have to be very honest. He says, using the Nigunim of davening with love songs or other things, he says, that's the same thing as bringing a foreign fire, an Eish Zara, which burns the neshama. He says, you can't do that. What a terrible idea. And by the way, everything I've quoted until now has not, and the surface in the slightest, discussed the most important factor of our Shaila. In other words, up until now, all we talked about was a negative source. For whatever reason, it's a rock song. I want to sing, take me out to the Kedusha to take me out to the ball game, right? We've been known, some people have been known to do that. So whether that's mutter or not is a little bit of a discussion between Rabbi Waldenberg and Rav Ovadia. You want to sing certain tunes of an individual who is less than stellar? Okay, so Rav Moshe says it's mutter. The others say it may stain your soul. Certainly something that we have to look into. But we still haven't hit the meat and potatoes of this Adama v'Shamayim song. And what's the meat and potatoes? This is not just a discussion of having benefit from something that may have its sources in something negative. Here, it's straight up Avodah Zarah potentially, right? Does that make it worse? Listen to the language of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Yoredeya Simon Kupman Bey Siftes Vav says, he says, Asur l'shmoa klei shir shel avodas kochavim. You're not allowed to listen to the church music. Olis takel benoy avodas kochavim, kiven shenene b'ri'ia. He says, you can't specifically have it in mind because you're deriving benefit from the avodas zaru. Mihu still, mihu davar she'ein miskavein mutter. If that was not your intent, it just happens to be. You can't walk until unless you pass it. That's that is to be allowed. Now, the source for that is ironically a Gemara in Pesachim, which we're learning currently with the Daf Yomi, because the Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Chaf Hei tells us Kol Mara V'Reyach, right, are all things that are not do not carry Me'ila with them. Kol Mara V'Reyach, a noise from Kodesh, a vision of seeing the artwork in the Beis HaMikdash. And the smell, right? You don't have me'ila. You might not be liable for me'ila, but one's not allowed to do it. And so we see that additional benefits are not allowed. So the Munkach Rebbe, who is the father of the Minchas Elazar, he was the Darchei Tshuva. So the Darchei Tshuva, who wrote a great compilation on all the beginning of Yoredeya, quotes all the different sources and resources on the beginning sections of Yoredeya. When he gets to this halacha, he turns around and he quotes the Sefer Hasidim. The Sefer Hasidim has nothing to do with the students of the Baal Shem Tov. It goes back earlier in history to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, the pious one. And he says, Asur la'adam l'zamer zemer na'im lifnei goy, pen yinagin lifnei avodah zarah shelo, oso hanigan. You're not allowed to go ahead and play a niggun in front of a goy if it's going to wind up getting played in front of his avodah zarah. And then he turns around and quotes the Knesset HaGedola, who also quotes from Sefer Hasidim, Sheko niggun shemenagnin oso l'avodah zarah, lo yas oso niggun l'akadosh baruch hu. If they use the tune in avodah zarah, Hail Mary, right? Hail Mary, Mother of God, or whatever they play, right? Oh, Maria. So whatever it is, you can't play that because it's playing, and you can't take something that's used for Avodah Zarah and then turn it over to Hashem, right? And certainly don't play Avodah Zarah songs in front of your children, so suggests the Munkacher in Darkei Tshuva. So if that's the case, if this Adama B'Shamayim to you appears to be neutral, but it really does have its resources in Avodah Zarah, it would really theoretically present a problem, and my friend would be correct. So when I get questions like this, I turn them over to my very close friend, Rav Aryeh Leibowitz, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, who is also famous. So when he discussed the issue, he brought it to my great Rebbe, to Rav Schechter, who said, oh, he thought that was a, they said, so can you play the song? And he said, oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. He was very opposed to the practice. Then he discussed it with our other Rebbe, with Rav Mordechai Willig, who said he had heard that it was played at an event last year within the yeshiva. There was something called the Battle of the Acapella Groups, and one of the groups played it. So he said, Eino Tov. He didn't think it was a good thing. So again, what should one do? So what I told this friend is, I think that he has to discuss it with the school's posek, present the same issue in front. But I have to be honest, after talking to Rabbi Leibowitz, I was not convinced so much that there was going to be an opportunity to play Adama B'Shamayim. So I asked him, I asked my friend, the guy who asked me the question in the first place, because he wanted to know, am I being obsessive? I said, I have to ask, I've never gone to a wedding or a bar mitzvah and heard this song. I have to be honest, most of the time it's because I'm going deaf at these weddings and bar mitzvahs, because I can't hear most things at weddings and bar mitzvahs, but that's a conversation for another time, right? But I haven't heard this. And I don't know, has anyone else heard Adama B'Shamayim? But when I ask the kids, oh yeah, people know about it. We don't like it, because what's the thing about hey, hey, ho, ho, you know, but it's something that needs to be discussed. I have not checked with Dina Lichman to find out if it does get played here in Berea. I certainly can guarantee it's not being played in the JC. Just not happening, right? But I haven't asked Dina. It's one of the questions I have that one of these days I'll get around to asking her, right? So it is. You have time for one more? Should we do one more? Because I think the other question is so fascinating also, but this one I want audience input. Mm-hmm. So Reuven is supposed to fly back to the States, right? He knows he's got a 1 a.m. flight. So he orders a taxi to come pick him up in Yerushalayim to take him to Lod Airport. And the taxi driver, before he goes to pick up Reuven, hears that Lod Airport's closed, Corona, right? And he therefore knows that Reuven's not taking off. But he figures, hey, no problem. Hey, Reuven ordered a cab. He's going to come. So he goes, picks up Reuven. And when he's about 5 or 6 minutes out of the airport, he says to him, I just want you to know, I tend to stay around about a half an hour. So like if your flight has a problem or whatever, just call me. I'll come back and get you, take you back. Sure enough, he gets to the airport and he finds out that the flight is canceled. And he looks around a little bit and he smells a rat. But sure enough, what happens? He winds up calling the driver, and the driver comes, takes him back to Yerushalayim. And as he gets close to the house, Reuven says, I'm not paying you for the trip. Why? You should have told me. You knew the airport was closed. You should have told me beforehand. And not only that, I'm not only not paying you for the trip back to Yerushalayim for your, I also want my money back for the trip out to Lod Airport, because you should have known better and you cheated me. So here's my question. Is the driver liable at all? Is Reuven chayev to pay at all? What's the deal?
I think he should pay the driver.
Why?
Because he asked the driver to bring him to the airport, and he brought him to the airport. It's the traveler's responsibility to make sure the flight is on time and the airport is open. And if he never checked, that's on him. The driver doesn't know. Maybe he's meeting a friend there for lunch.
No, at 1 a.m, he wasn't meeting his friend for lunch. Okay. And the driver knew he was supposed to fly out, which is why he told him about. So does that change the factors for you? Or do you still want to maintain that?
I'm not saying the driver acted ethically, but I think legally,
but criminally liable in terms of liability, right. Tort liability, you say you're not obligated. Okay, anybody else?
Well, there are two things happening there. First thing, the person ordered, if I order somebody to bring a backhoe to my house to drill a hole, and the guy knows that, you know, you're not allowed to do it, you know, because there's going to be a snowstorm or who knows what, and you didn't get the right license or whatever, but you ordered it, so I'm bringing the hoe. Then I'll take it back, and I'll charge you for it. So there's a certain responsibility that the person that is hiring somebody, but at the same time, the person, if he knows, you can't put a stumbling block in front of somebody.
Okay, so
he knew you're not supposed to put a stumbling block. So the question is, halachically, is he obligated to pay both going there and coming back? Or is he halachically responsible to, because he was hired and he did what he was hired to do?
Okay. So there's a definite obligation to pay from Devorah, and Avi says, no, I'm still not sure. I'm splitting the baby. And Dina, you want to jump in? Anybody? Okay. So anytime you want to jump in, just flip off the mute button. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Devorah. Ready? Watch this. And it's funny, Doc's example, Avi, your example is really, to me, like, hilarious, because I thought you were about to quote this Gemara, and I was like, oh, how does somebody remember this odd Gemara out of nowhere? It's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Ayin Vav. All the way at the bottom of the page, the Gemara tells a story about Rava. Rava says, now remember, in Daf Ayin Vav and Bava Metzia is talking about people who hire workers, skilled laborers versus unskilled laborers. And so the Gemara says, Haiman de agar agiri l'rifka. What if I hire day laborers to plow a field? All right. V'asa mitra umalia maya. And rain came and it flooded the field. You're not going to be able to plow a field that's flooded underwater, which is exactly your case, Doc. Right? It was the case you brought up about the backhoe. So, if they had assessed the field the day before and they saw that they were not going to be able to plow the field because it was already flooded, and they still showed up to plow the field, says Rava, pseida de poalim. The responsibility to not show up is on the day laborer, right? The balabayas doesn't have to pay them. Why is that? Since he could argue, they knew that there was no reason for them to show up. And by showing up, what did they do? Right? They showing up, they caused their own loss, namely that they could have gone and done a different job. Maybe they would have spackled in somebody's house or something else. But it was their loss due to their action and not the responsibility of the balabayas. And this is the way the issue is brought down in Choshen Mishpat. And by the Ramah in Simon Shin Lama Dalet Sif Beis, says the Ramah, Sachar Poalim Lachpor Sadeu Ba Matar Balayla, Binyan She'enan Yecholin Lachpor, if I hire day laborers to show up to work tomorrow, and it rains so badly that they can't dig, so Imlo Ra'ua Poalim HaKarka, if they hadn't assessed the field the day before, say to the Balabayasu, then I have to pay for it, because they didn't know. To have a leilo diem shalo yavo, because then they would have had the responsibility should have been on him to tell them don't show up. V'yesh omrim din biker balabayas hamalacha mi ba'erev v'rasha tzricha b'olim pata b'chol inyan. Right, if the balabayas did check, right, he still might still be pater. But according to the Gemara and according to the Ramah, although Reuven ordered the taxi, the fact that the driver knew that the trip that Reuven was going on was going to be a waste, had he told Reuven of that fact, Reuven wouldn't have taken the trip. And so the great Dayan Rav Tzvi Spitz, who writes a series of svarim known as Mishpatei HaTorah, so he argued in last week's edition of Mishpatei HaTorah that the driver did what he did in order to make money off of Reuven. And not only is Reuven not chayev to pay for the return trip, right? You know, when he says, oh, call me back, he's entitled to the money back from the first unnecessary trip as well. Now, Devorah says, well, wait a second, Rabbi. What about the fact that Reuven had a responsibility to check on his own flight status? I mean, after all, the guy out in the field should, you know, either he assessed the field or he didn't. Why is it only the driver who has the responsibility? Right? Isn't that your point from before? Maybe we should go halvesies. You'll pay one trip, not the other trip. So Rav Spitz says no. He says, even though your point may be correct, that it's Reuven's responsibility to check his own flight status before he leaves to the airport. But there's a Gemara in Bava Kama. And this Gemara appears on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, even if I'm negligent, I leave my utensils in the middle of the street in the Rishut HaRabim, you still don't have a right to damage my stuff on purpose. If you happen to damage it, you'll be exempt from paying. That doesn't mean you can go up, run up to my Ming vase and kick it because I left it in the street, right? And so here also, the driver specifically went knowing I'm going to make 400 or 500 shekels off Reuven tonight because he's got no other way to get to and from the airport at 1:30 in the morning. So as far as he's concerned, he damaged him and the driver is liable. Now, as far as the trip home is concerned, why should Reuven be exempt? After all, the driver is only, maybe the actual damage is the trip there, but the trip home is just a grumma. What's grumma? Remember grumma? Grumma is when I cause the damage. It's the cost of the trip home. You needed a ride home. I gave you a ride home. That's only grumma. All right? So first of all, says Rav Spitz, that the argument of grumma is only applicable if the driver himself hadn't driven Reuven home. If Reuven would have had to hire a different driver, maybe then you could have argued it was grumma. But as far as getting paid, Reuven can still claim that he holds that the mazik has to pay for nezikin caused by grumma, afilu ayide adam. That's a machlokas harishonim. In other words, there is a machlokas if I cause grumma by my direct action, I still may be liable to pay. And so therefore, since Reuven's the one holding the money at that point, right, the driver wants his money. At this point, Reuven can say, come try to take it from me, but you don't have that ability. And of course, that issue is discussed in Chosha Mishpat and Simon Shin Pei Vav Sif Aleph. Where Spitz adds that even if Reuven had hired a second driver, the first driver would still have to pay for the second trip because it's not really called grumma, it's called garmi. What's garmi? Garmimi is a lot more direct than grumma, right? When I spend money based on your word and your word causes damage, that's not called grumma, it's called garmi. You have to pay even for the return trip. And so that's due to the fact that the first driver's actions caused direct damage. Now, if the driver hadn't known that the airport was closed until he got to the airport, that's a totally different story, right? Why? Because who's responsible in that situation?
The traveler.
Right, Reuven, the traveler. And so in that situation, what should the halacha be?
Well, then he should pay him.
For how many trips?
Both.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. In that situation, it's Reuven's bad luck that caused the difficulty. It wasn't the driver's. Should the driver lose because Reuven had bad luck and the airport got closed? P.S. I think we've all been in that situation, and don't worry if you haven't been in that situation. I've definitely been in that situation enough times for every single one of us in the learning tonight. In other words, you go to the airport, you think you're getting on the plane, and it doesn't happen, right, for whatever reason. And I've had to pay for the ride home. I don't get to tell the Uber driver or the cab driver in the old days of yore, right? I'm sorry. you know, but you know, it's I shouldn't have to pay both ways. Maybe I can call the airline and have the airline pay for it, but I don't have that option to turn around and go to anybody else. And so in short, as far as the second question is concerned, right, if the driver knew, so Rishpitz Paskins, and it's a fascinating psak, because as do you say, Dvor, you would have assumed otherwise, and even Doc was willing to go halvesies with the guy, but the psak is that no, the driver caused all the damage. Not only does Ruvay not have to pay for the trip home, right, he doesn't have to pay for the trip there, and the driver has to pay him back. And if he used a different driver, the first driver has to pay for the second driver within the process. But if Ruvain didn't know and the driver didn't know, that's a different story. And then it's just Ruvain's bad luck. As far as the first question is concerned, let's find our hey, hey, ho, ho, heys by turning around and finding them with the Almighty. After all, hey, hey, he's upstairs and he's down here. He's in front of us, behind us, and all here, there, and everywhere. That's where he can be found. And as a Hashem, we will not only look for him, but he will be everywhere, and we will continue to benefit from his presence as well. Okay? So that's it for this week. And as a Hashem, we'll meet again next week. Have a wonderful, terrific Shabbos. A Shabbos filled with warmth and song. And I'm stressing the warmth because I'm told that it's going to be quite cold. So please stay safe. Have a great Shabbos, everybody.
Thank you.